However, standing by right now is the one and the only, Sean Mooney.
Who?
Mooney, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man.
After you threw him off through the announce table, Taker climbs back down, he gets in the ring, and he goes, see if he's breathing.
So right before I called 911, I thought she'd fallen asleep. Kind of shook her a little bit to wake her up, and she did not respond.
And I'll go to my grave, testifying or whatever, swearing that Davey was not on drugs. If he was on drugs, the way Brett says, how great does that make Davey?
Are you laughing, Sean?
I get off the track here all the time.
Did you just laugh, Sean?
You go ahead and chop me. Give me a big chop. I'll give you my whole chest and everything. And then I'll look at you like this, and then I'll punch you right in the mouth as hard as I can.
Attention, Sean Mooney, you scum, you slime, you maggot. If there's no further questions, you're dismissed. Carry on, maggot.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another edition of Primetime with Sean Mooney. As we continue to add to the PTSM universe, a lot is going on, and we have an awful lot to talk about this week, and we are going to get to all of your questions. This is going to be a special edition, another Q&A. We haven't done one in a while, and I will be bringing on the esteemed producer of the program, Casey Jerome, back coming up. But before we get there, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the last episode that we had here on PTSM with Kevin Sullivan. And I hope you all got a chance to listen to that one. If you haven't, please do, because it was a great episode. It's another one of those that we go into, and I knew, you know, a lot about Kevin Sullivan and his career. I did, but I really, after you get into the conversation, and then you realize just how much of an influence he was on a lot of what happened during those years in the 80s and 90s, especially. Behind the scenes. I mean, he had this tremendous wrestling career, was a champion in the NWA down in the Gulf Coast, the Gold Coast down there, and was a tag team champion, and a number of other titles came his way, and really wrestled the best in the world, traveled the world, worked for all these different organizations. And then, along the way, he is recognized as somebody who is great at booking, you know, and having a real sense of storytelling. And he's used by several of these promoters. And then, of course, he is most remembered as far as that goes with the WCW, and, played a big role in what happened there. And I find it really interesting that, he talked about it. Eric Bischoff, during the time, they butted heads all the time. And when I think, Kevin left there and everything just blew apart at the end, Eric was not so kind with his words about Kevin Sullivan. But as the years have gone on, and he's said it, Kevin was a huge influence. It's a very positive influence on the road that they traveled and the success that they had. So a really interesting episode. And if you haven't caught it yet, please do, because it is a really a good one. And, I've run into Kevin several times, at some of these shows that we do and backstage at, he was at StarCast and, briefly got a chance to chat, but really didn't get the opportunity to, get to know him better. But it's really great when I get to do these podcasts, because I do get to know these people a lot better than I would have ever gotten the chance. And so I feel like I have a new friend. Really, we've texted back and forth quite a few times since, and it's pretty cool. So anyway, I just wanted to give a big shout out once again to Kevin Sullivan. And if you have an opportunity, not only listen to that podcast, but follow him on all the different outlets out there. I don't know how active he is on Twitter or Instagram, but he is one interesting individual, and he still gets out there to a lot of these shows. But man, it's just great to go into his career and have heard his thoughts on what that journey was like for him. Also, I have to have some corrections here. on the part of Mr. Ted DiBiase. Now, he texted me, and I'm still trying to figure out, did we discuss a lot of this or did we get into it? But he was, I think, fearful that maybe we went in our discussion the second time around that he may have said some things that weren't exactly accurate, or maybe I did, and we just wanted to set the record straight here. And he says, you know, he sent me a text that, hey, Sean, some corrections on the podcast. I wrestled Hulk Hogan in his Madison Square Garden debut. That was December 17th, 1979. He wanted to make clear, I wasn't his first WWF opponent, though, overall. Hulk had already debuted on television with WWF Championship Wrestling exactly 1 month earlier on November 17th. And he even provided a link, which I had to take a look at because I just wanted to see it. I mean, it's just great. It's vintage Ted DiBiase going up against a fairly young Hulk Hogan. And really, I'll tell you what is true and factual is that very much so, Ted DiBiase did the Hulkster a solid at Madison Square Garden when they you know, met that night in the ring, as Vince Sr. had asked Ted to you know, put him over, put this guy over, and he absolutely did that. And Ted tells a story of how, you know, years later when he ended up in the WWF as the Million Dollar Man, that Terry, you know, made it clear that you know, I never forgot. I never forgot that, and he certainly helped put Ted over in the WWF once he arrived there and had that tremendous career. He says also that his first stint in the WWF was for 10 months, from mid-February to mid-December 1979. That I guess when we had reported it before, we had said it was 8 months. He was there for 10 months, which is very interesting. I didn't know that he had stayed that long. I thought it was, you know, kind of a very short period of time. But, you know, that's almost a year. So anyway, Ted, just wanted to make sure you knew we got this all out there. And I appreciate you wanting to make sure that we make everything accurate. But regardless of it all, man, it's just fascinating to hear the stories and the background on this of, you know, how it all happened. It's incredible because, you know, to make your debut at Madison Square Garden, that is a big deal. That is a big deal. And for the Hulkster to have stepped in the ring for that first match there with just an incredible professional like Ted DiBiase had to be a fantastic start for him, you know, in that mecca of sports entertainment there. And I love hearing these stories because you would never know how Hulk felt about that, you know, and that it was something that years later he would remember. And certainly when Ted arrived there, he already had a friend. So just awesome stuff. But again, Ted DiBiase, thanks again for coming on the podcast. I'm glad we got that all cleared up. We put the word out a week or so ago that it was time once again, because we've had inquiries and especially what I'm up to lately regarding the new NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, and their Power program, and now joining that broadcast team. So we discussed it, Evan and Casey and I. We all talked about it and said, you know, we should do an episode where we get everybody a chance to throw some questions out there, and then we can get me to talk about everything that's happened, because God, for weeks, and Casey will back me up on this. I couldn't even tell him. I didn't tell anybody because they wanted to kind of keep it under wraps. They didn't really know when I was going to be able to get out there, and it was tough, man. It was really difficult for me to keep it under wraps, but we did. And it was just fantastic when it all happened. And I'll let Casey, when he jumps in here, I'm sure he's going to have a number of questions. But I have to tell you, I am just absolutely blown away by the response. First of all, the response, like how many responded to my appearance there, and people hearing the news but also just how incredibly positive it was, man. It warmed my heart. It really did. So with that, we've got a ton of questions. We'll get to all of them, every single one of them, and we'll give a shout out to everybody who sent us a question here, and we'll go from there. So Casey, I think you're there. Casey Jerome Beck, you all know him. He's become a part of this program now that we've been together. I don't know how long. I know you didn't start the podcast with me, but man, it's got to be, what, a year and a half now? How long have you been with PTSM?
Little over 2 years.
Really? October. How long have we been doing this? How long have I? Jeez. So like I'm like 2.5 years in. I think it was what, June of
2017.
Oh my goodness.
June of 2017, and I joined in October of 2017.
Wow, man, can you believe it? We're still doing this.
Now, I know, and there's been many times where I think the three of us, you know, were about on the edge of saying that's it, but.
Yeah,
some reason, we're still going strong, and you're still doing it, my friend. And
I'm still here. That's what you say. And you're still here. That's good. That's a good thing, right?
I am still here. I would kick myself if I would have left and found out that I could have gone to Vegas or whatever, you know. So
all the things we've gotten to do so far,
and God, it's been so much fun. It's been so
plenty
much
ahead. Fun. And really, Casey, now I haven't had the opportunity to apologize to you that, you know, I had to kayfabe even you in Evan. When I was able to put it out there, you were one of the first to know. And so anyway, I hope I didn't harm any feelings there that we're still good. Is that the case? Are we good?
I don't know. I still got a little work to do. I felt just a little slighted that you wouldn't tell me the first time simply because of how long our relationship, so to speak, has gone. But I do understand why you did it. And yeah, it's, you know.
Well, see, in situations there, and I've learned this in the past, that, there are people I trust, absolutely. But I don't want to give people information sometimes that, you know, for whatever reason, something slips or they, you know, if they don't know, then there's nothing they have to fear. There's nothing that I have to worry about anybody putting out there. So that's kind of the way I need to know basis. And you know, and this thing went on, you probably had an inkling of things going on because this was probably a couple of months in the making. So did you suspect or was I that good?
A little of both. I thought it was interesting that you got so many NWA guys all kind of in a row. We, you know, we've got three or four interviews in the books right now.
Yeah. I thought
it was interesting, but I didn't really put two and two together. I just thought that Dave thought you were a cool guy and he, you know, provided you his talent or whatever. But
well, and of course, I loved my interviewing skills. Of course, that was a big part of it.
Yeah. No,
but I thought that's what I thought you would think because here, you know, we had Dave Lagana on the podcast, who of course is Billy Corgan's partner in all this. He's the number two there, and we had a great conversation, and things kind of went from there. But I did, and you know, I wanted to get the guys on. I wanted to help push that immediately because I just. I like what they are doing, you know, and after seeing the product and seeing how much fun they're having, I'm, you know, if nothing was going to come out of that, I did want to help put those guys over. And boy, am I glad I did, because as I've learned and gotten the chance to meet these guys, they're just what a great roster. But so since we're on that subject, Casey, I'll let you fire away, because if anybody's wondering about some of that flying around and how that situation happened and what it's like there and what the taping was like in Atlanta, fire away.
I'm actually curious about that, but we'll get to some other questions here first. Team Rocket UGA AEW, it's a mouthful, on Twitter asked, what brought you to the NWA? I mean, was it just the interview with Dave that kind of impressed him, or was this something that like he was planning or what?
Well, no, I don't think that was, I mean, I think that after we had that podcast conversation and it may have helped move the motivation for it. But this really all started, I would say, back at StarCast when they had All In. And Nick was going up against Nick Aldis, who's the current NWA World Heavyweight Champion, was going up against Cody in that match there. And Nick is he's not only just a great guy, but very much loves the history of professional wrestling. And he was growing up during those 80s and 90s. And was a huge fan of the WWF and that kind of that old school wrestling. Loved the NWA and the AWA, and he grew up in England, and so they would get their information through magazines over there and some VHS tapes and that kind of thing, and loves the old style, the old stick mic interview style. And loved the stuff that I did back when I was with the World Wrestling Federation. And when that opportunity came up, when Cody contacted me and said, hey, we'd love to have you do an interview or two at All In, I jumped at the chance. I just thought it would be fun. And I was going to be there anyway doing some stuff for StarCast. And so we got the opportunity to shoot that interview, and it turns out Dave Lagana was there producing it. And so there was that immediate connection, and Nick and I hit it off immediately. We just, for whatever reason, we just did, and had a great conversation about the business. And he talked about how much, he loves that, that feel to a match where it's like a big fight. Mm-hmm. He loved the idea of doing, pre-fight instructions, the guys meet in the center of the ring and loves that. And so there's this edge of reality and, of course, a sports entertainment. And so, like I said, he loves that whole thing about the interviews and the way they were done in the past and the opportunity to play off somebody instead of those cutting a promo, as I say, has evolved into is the guy just going into the camera and doing his bit. He loves the interaction between an interviewer and whoever the subject is, whoever the talent is. And huge fan of Gene Okerlund. So, it was a match made in heaven in a sense, because we hit it right off. And I know for a fact that he had something to do with putting me on their radar and encouraging them to bring me on board. So That's how that initial contact happened. And then Dave and I had conversations, and I interviewed Nick again through that point, and he just said, "Hey, yeah, just really hoping that I've said a few things to them, but I'm hoping something happens." And it did. And I'm really, really happy about it.
So cool. I personally marked out when I saw you on the NWA show last week. I'm dead serious. It's not just because you're my boss or whatever. It's because of everything that I know about you and have seen with you, and I know that you're a unique personality. So I know that your talent is gonna go so far there. I love it. All right, so Justin Ryan Lawton on Facebook, and I'm going to let you stroke your ego a little bit with this one. Did you ever think you were so loved by pro wrestling fans and that you would come back to the business after almost 30 years away?
Stroke my ego, huh? that is awesome. And I have to tell you, I mean, be honest, is that I thought that there might be, some people would say, "Oh, that's really cool, Mooney's back there." But I had no idea that it would have the reaction it did. And, because I just did the one interview on that episode, and I was just amazed. I really was. And really humbled by it. And I really never, ever thought that I would be in this situation again. I honest to God didn't. And, just doing the podcast, I thought, okay, I kind of got my toe back in the water on this. It's fun. I love interviewing a lot of these personalities. It takes me back, and was really enjoying that. And once in a while, getting a chance to do some things at StarCast. But this opportunity has just been fantastic. And I have to say, I went into, I had some trepidation. I mean, it's been a while since I've been in that format. I mean, I'm on live television every single day. I mean, Monday through Friday. And there's nothing that prepares you more for, you know, things to happen and be able to tap dance than that. And, but at the same time, it's, you're in front of a live audience there. And, so I was, you know, nervous. I was, I mean, I have to be honest here. And, but once I went out there and it was awesome that it was Nick who, you know, requested that I do that first interview with him. And it just, it, as soon as I got back, went out there and they did the 5, 4, 3, 2 and go. And with the crowd, and it was just like, boom. I mean, I was just locked in.
Yeah.
And it was, I hope people could tell that was the case, because it was, I was like, all right, what's next? What's the next one? You know, I just wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was, I've been blown away by it, really. The reaction has been just great.
Sean Sumi on Twitter says, when will I hear Zicky Dice make primetime truly outlandish?
Well, I would say very soon. I am going to get as many of these personalities on, these great athletes and great talents, because they're all so unique. It's that roster is just really, it's just fantastic. And Zicky Dice, so, you know, we put out a question out there, you know, who would you want me to interview first? Or I think that was the question. And of all that roster, and it's got a really rich roster. You're talking Nick Aldis and Eli Drake and Aaron Stevens. And I really like Ricky Starks. And the ladies are just fantastic with Thunder Rosa and Melina and Allison Kay and Ashley Vox. And all these people are just great. Every single one of them. You know, Billy and Dave have done a fantastic job. And you have to remember, I mean, can you imagine you're starting this operation really from the ground up, and you need to pick a team, a roster that's going to help you launch this this program. And you need all the parts to work, and at least a vast majority of them. And they did a great job, because all of them on this roster, all the people on this roster are all so unique. They're really, really good, and you'll hear me refer to them often as saying that they got a murderer's row. And I think Nick said it first when we were having a conversation, and really, it makes a lot of sense to call it that, because they've got some of the best people that could cut promos in the business, absolutely in the business. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, these guys were out there and have not been in the mainstream pro wrestling, but they are all just unique talents. And what's great about them is that they've been up and down in this business. Every one of them has been up and down in this business. So they know the highs of it, and they know the lowest lows of it. And so there's no head cases. These guys are grateful for the opportunity. They love being in front of this audience, and they love entertaining people. And you've got a great mix of, you know, some of these more veteran type wrestlers who have been around, and they're not certainly, you know, they're all still in great shape. I mean, look at Eli Drake, my God, he's in fantastic shape, and all these guys that are there. But then you've also got some of these really young talents, and they're going to help develop these guys, you know, people like Ricky Starks and some of the younger people they have on the roster. So it's just a great mix. And Zicky Dice is really unique, because I'd never seen him before. And I'm not all that tapped into the independent market out there, you know, the different organizations. Right. But you'd be surprised to know he has not been around that long. He is from a he was his first launch into fame was as a pop rocker, kind of an edgy a punk rocker band that he was with, and he was the lead singer on that. Mm-hmm. And was very, very animated on stage, and always a big wrestling fan. And someone talked to him and said, you know what, you should be a wrestler. And he's not that old, but he started late as a wrestler. But it turns out that Zicky Dice had this band, and Seth Rollins was a big fan of his band. And of course, they kind of hooked up, became friends, because Zicky loves professional wrestling, and Seth happened to be a fan of his band. And after this person that told him that you should go for it, he called up Seth, who's attached to the school, and said, I want to learn how to wrestle. And that's what he did. So, and he's good at it. And he is really great, I guess, from his stage presence. That's where all this comes from. But he has not been around that long, which is amazing. And he's become very popular in a short period of time. Just took off with the fans with the NWA, and he's great. He did this promo where out at the studios where they shoot the shows, the GPG studios there. He went out. There was an actual protest out front, and it wasn't having anything to do with wrestling. It was they were protesting war or something out in the crowd, and he saw this and went out there with a camera. I think right with his phone. He had somebody with a phone, and he did this whole promo saying, yeah, you should be protesting that I'm not getting a title shot or whatever. And it is just a riot. And you could see the people, because he is just as loud as they are. He's yelling as the guy's trying to speak, and people are looking over at him like, what the hell? And some guy tries to come over, you know, and kind of block him, you know, like, hey, move away from me. And he's having none of it and just destroys this guy verbally. And, you know, just doesn't give him a chance to really say anything. And then he goes on like to shake his hand, and he pulls his hand away. And it's just great stuff. So if you can check that out. But anyway, a really long answer to that question is that we will have Zicky Dice on, no question about it.
Awesome. All right, we're going to move on to more general questions here. Paul Diamond on Twitter says, hey, Sean, what's your favorite meal?
Really? That's a question? He wants to know what my favorite meal is?
Yes. Oh, the world goodness. Is dying to know what your favorite meal is.
Jeez. boy. Well, I would say, this is something that's been since I was a kid. I always loved spaghetti and meatballs, and really a good sauce and pasta and a good and some meatballs, and I'm a happy man, maybe with a glass of red wine. That's a great meal, and some good bread. And bread's important. So I guess that would be my favorite meal.
Are you a cook by default, or are you one of those guys that just orders takeout all the time?
No, I love to cook, and I do quite a bit. And a lot of that comes because I was when my kids were young, and I was divorced, and I would have them half the time. And after going out and getting fast food all the time, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I can't keep doing this. And so I started coming up with all these meals, and I had Daddy's Stroganoff, which was like this. I used to get mushroom soup, cream of mushroom soup, and I had a crock pot, and I would put a can of that in, and then get like a roast and chop that up into cubes and let it cook all day. Mm-hmm. And that was about it. And it was, and then over egg noodles, and the kids loved it. And so I had all these meals that I basically came up with. I mean, I actually did some videos on them. You can find them out there somewhere. But where I did this whole series of meals for the kids. It was for, you know, like dads who were either divorced or had the kids while mom was away or something. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, I'm not a chef by any stretch of the imagination, but I have a bunch of go-to meals I'm really good at. I can make a great spaghetti sauce from scratch with the real garlic and all that. And also I'm a master on the grill. I am really good, because when I was in college, I cooked at a restaurant and on a grill at a big steakhouse, and where they were doing like 200 meals a night. And believe me, if any of you guys out there have ever cooked in a restaurant, when you got that many meals coming, you know how to cook steak. And to this day, I can just touch that steak. I'll tell you exactly where it is. And I cook a mean ass steak. And folks, salt and pepper. That's it. Don't put anything else on that meat. Salt and pepper. Okay. But but I'm a good cook. I really am. And my wife loves that. She loves the fact that I cook a meal here. She's a fantastic cook, but I like to get in front of that stove or out in the grill every chance I get.
Are you a charcoal or a propane kind of guy?
No, I can't deal with the charcoal stuff. It just takes too damn long, and then you got to clean it up. Well, if I had my way, we'd grill 5 nights a week. Yeah. I mean, really. But I have to go to bed too damn early. But I like to throw something on the grill, and so my dad loves cooking with mesquite wood, as out here in Arizona. We got a lot of that around, and it gives a different flavor. But I don't have time for that. I like to fire up the propane. The real wood, it's great, but too much time.
Jared JL on Twitter asks, which wrestler worked their gimmick backstage?
Oh, wow. Back in those days, Sid was really no different. Warrior was kind of the same way. He was, and Randy, I mean, Randy was, that was Randy. Boy, if you look at the really early stuff of Randy, he was always kind of the macho man, but he just perfected it. And, you hear Lanny talk about how he kind of came into that character with, ooh, yeah, the whole thing. Yep. But he always had, that voice wasn't something that he put on. It was how he talked. And as he developed that character, man, he was the same way. I mean, even when he was out of there, I don't ever remember really seeing him in, where he wasn't in the high boots and, he would wear like a pair of jeans or something like that, but he was always the macho man. I mean, he really was just that it never really changed. So, God, who else? I don't know. You'd have to throw names out at me, but who would be like that? But I always thought that, like the ones that I always thought were really interesting were the ones that, their character was just so far out there and they were completely different people backstage, like George, George Steele, like the animal, George Animal Steele. And just to see him out there, and doing bits with him and he'd be like, ooh, and then you're like talking backstage with him like, yeah, so what do you think of those dolphins or whatever, talking football or whatever. I always got a kick out of that though, because they would be so far from character when it came to, they'd have to get into that mode. Other guys, that wasn't that much of a stretch. They were the same, in or out of character. Wasn't that much of a line between the two.
Right. What about like Mr. Perfect? Did he live the gimmick off camera?
No. I mean, and the thing was that, the Mr. Perfect gimmick was just a boastful Kurt Hennig. I mean, okay. Kurt was a very confident guy anyway, cocky. But really likable, he wasn't an asshole, he wasn't like that. But at the same time, he was a very confident individual. So for him to become Mr. Perfect wasn't, that far to go, because he was a really great athlete and had the bravado to back it up and could deliver tremendous promos. But that wasn't such a stretch for him to, between in front of a camera or behind it.
Mm-hmm. Travis Peters on Facebook asks, do you think Undertaker should still be undefeated at WrestleMania?
God, at this point? Yeah. I think that he should never, ever be beaten. He's been at it for so long. I mean, what do? Then you beat him and then that's the last thing people remember?
Yep.
No. I think the Undertaker forever should just be this persona that nobody could ever really touch. I think that, cause what is that going to do beating him? What is that he's lost it finally, or, right. Like some old champ? No, I think that the Undertaker is not human and he's never has been. And, so why would hit the conclusion to his career be anything but that? Yeah.
Speaking of Undertaker, John Lovell on Twitter asked, did you ever witness Undertaker and Andre the Giant interact backstage in 1991?
Wow. Not really. I mean, I don't think you know, Andre was a really private person. It wasn't like you were going to see him, you know, walking around socializing. You know, when Andre was in the building, he was somewhere with a table where it was set up, and he was playing cards with or whatever the game was, cribbage or whatever they were. But that's pretty much. And then he would hold court, you know, and people would be, you know, that were accepted into that circle would be able to come in. But for the most part, he was a very private person. I don't know. I know they didn't have any heat that I ever knew about, but you know, it wasn't, I just don't know the, you know, that was like his crowd that, you know, that Mark would have been hanging out with him, but I don't think there was ever any bad feelings between them. But you have to understand that that wasn't what Andre did. He wasn't back there socializing with people. His idea of, you know, he loved the people that he liked having around him, but he spent most of his time where he would be back there, you know, and just enjoying his time with those people that he liked playing cards with. And that was it. I mean, Alfred was always, whenever Alfred was there, he would be by Andre. Andre liked Alfred a lot. Mm-hmm. So he would play cards with him for hours. And that was pretty much it. But as far as that relationship or that interaction, I never got to witness much of it because, like I said, it wasn't like Andre was out walking around. Right. And I wasn't at the table playing cards.
Moondog Mooney on Twitter asks, are you my long-lost brother?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, when I was a kid, some of my friends, they did call me Moondog. But Moondog, I tell you, I don't need any more brothers. You know, I did great with my one brother. And, you know, love him to death. And then I have that other guy, Ian, who you guys got to hear on. And, you know, so it's like 50-50. So I think I should stop where I'm at. I don't need any more brothers.
Are we sure Moondog Mooney isn't your alter personality?
I don't know. I don't know the character of Moondog Mooney. But, you know, there are not. I don't think there's a whole lot of Moonies in the United States. So probably down the line, you know, there may be some connection. So, you know, maybe not long lost brother, but maybe long lost relative.
Second cousin twice removed or something.
Oh, who knows? Who knows?
Juan Rosales on Twitter asks, were you ever out with Ted DiBiase when he was, quote, living the gimmick, i.e. giving huge tips at restaurants, buying rounds of drinks for everyone?
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of times that where we would be at a hotel and be in the bar or something like that. And, it was really fun because he did, he lived that gimmick. There was, you know, where he would, it was, directed to be that way. And, you know, it wasn't insane, crazy. He wasn't doing the, you know, the bill dance or something like that. And at the same time, you know, he could play that character too. He was a heel. So people, if they tried to bug him, he could say, you know, get lost basically. But, it was a few times. So I did get a chance to have a few cocktails with Ted back in the day, but no, you know, and it's not like I'm hiding stories here. Cause I didn't, you know, as you guys, if I have said over the years that, you know, I live by that code of, you know, I love to have being friends with those guys and had a great relationship and would have a cocktail or two with them here and there. But I also knew that I wouldn't cross that line. I wasn't going to get myself in a situation, first of all, that was going to get me fired. And second of all, I didn't want it to change the relationship I had with them, working with them professionally. Because, you know, whenever we did interviews backstage, it was, you know, a very professional situation and we had to nail it and had to get it right. And I didn't ever want to lose any of that respect that we had for each other.
Did you ever witness that to where like somebody, like I'll just throw Gene out there or Alfred or something like that, where they kind of, they got in close with the wrestler and then it kind of fell out and then it was weird professionally? Did anything like that ever happen?
No, because I think they live by the same code. You know, that Gene was the same way. I mean, you know, the guys loved him, you know, everybody. And he was exceptionally close to Terry, to Hulk. But, you know, Gene would, you know, be with people like, you know, Bobby or some of the other guys. But as far as the wrestlers go, Gene was the same way. He knew that, you know, we had to keep our distance to an extent. And he certainly enjoyed having a cocktail when we're out, whatever. But at the same time, he had the same, credo that I did. So he wouldn't do that. Bobby was more one of the boys, you know, because he got in the ring. He could take a bump with the best of them. And his demons have been well documented. And he probably got himself into a few situations that probably weren't real healthy for him. But, you know, he was truly on that side. I mean, Bobby could hang with us, certainly. He was part of the announce team. But I think when it came down to it, and especially the way he came up, you know, he was one of those guys who was on the road and he was, working these local shots. And, you know, he came up the hard way. And so that was in his blood from the very beginning. As the peaks that he went to, but when it came down to it, Bobby was like, that's who he was, man. He was a guy who worked his ass off, got endless number of shots in the ring, could dish it out as much as he delivered it, especially with his mouth. But but Bobby was a different, you know, he was a different person. There was a different line there. He would be considered one of the boys. I'd say more so than he was on the side we were on as announcers.
Gotcha. M. Marco on Twitter asks, Team Hogan or Team Flair?
Me?
Yep.
Oh, where do you think?
Hogan?
Huh?
Hogan?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. I've said it many times. So I caught that wave late with the Hulk, and Gene was his guy, absolutely. But I worked with Hulk a lot. I did a lot of interviews with him, and I also was witness to what was happening, and I was there, seeing the reaction of everybody. When he would step into an arena, and my God, they blow the roof off that place. You go out into that arena and physically feel, not just hear, physically feel the sound of that crowd going through your body, popping when that guy stepped out there. I'd never seen anything like that in my entire life. And I had been to a lot of great events, World Series and all these other great events, and had never seen anything like that ever. So that has remained in my soul. I've never forgotten. Hulk Hogan is one of a kind. He changed the entire business forever. And Rick, of course, man, look at Ric Flair was in two Super Bowl commercials last night. That just shows you what the star power that he has. Right. But, you know, Rick made his fame skyrocket within the world of professional wrestling before, he has gone on to do what he's done. But Hulk changed not just only the world of professional wrestling, he changed entertainment as on a whole. Mainstream media couldn't get enough with the MTV rock and wrestling. After Hulk was in the Rocky movie, and I mean, he was the biggest star on the planet. He was rock before, that type of fame that the Rock is enjoying now. But Hulk did it first on that stage. And, he needs to forever get credit for that, regardless of what you think of Hulk Hogan or whatever. If you don't have him as, if not the number one, he's got to be top five. Absolutely. He's the Rushmore. He's on the side of that mountain. There's no question about it. And it always cracks me up to hear people say different. Yeah. Because if you just look at it and how that guy impacted the world of professional wrestling, and you could say, Vince is a genius in what he did, but it would have never happened, not to that level, without Terry Bollea. There's no way absolutely no way that it would have happened without him. That union was a lightning in a bottle. That's a once in a lifetime, and that's pretty much. So yeah, I've always been Team Hogan.
Okay.
And love Rick, but I didn't work with Rick a whole lot because, right, you know, he wasn't with the WWF for that long, and when I did get to do stuff with him, it was pretty limited. We did interviews and stuff like that, but I worked with Hulk a lot more.
Okay. Nick on Patreon asks, what's the best rib you personally witnessed backstage?
That I personally witnessed? Wow.
Yes.
Jeez, there was an awful lot of them. I never liked the mean-spirited ones, man. I hated that stuff that they did. You know, you'd always would see the, they put the padlocks on people's bags and, you know, it's funny, but then when you got to get to catch a flight or, you know, doing stuff like that, and then you got to go find somebody to cut, you know, a lock off, was not great. I think, God, I'm trying to think what would be the funniest, the best spirited, I mean, there was one of my favorite ribs, which I thought was pretty harmless, is that we'd be on a flight and somebody would have a can of shaving cream. And I remember, I think it was Bob Collins, who was one of the public relations people. He's the guy that used to seat people in the arena. Mm-hmm. And we were coming back a late flight and somebody, I don't remember which one of the boys was, but he, you know, put the shaving cream on his head and made this big giant little tower. It looked like a Dairy Queen ice cream cone and you don't feel it because there's no weight to it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really a tall guy. And this thing was probably 8 inches tall the way they did it. And he's getting off this plane and people are just looking at him like, what the hell?
That's great.
And he never felt, I don't know when he figured it out. I don't know when we, because nobody would say anything to him. Nobody who was, you know, part of our group. And then when he's a stranger, you're not going to say, hey, you got something on your head. So he's walking through the whole terminal with this big giant mound of shaving cream on his head. And that was always a big favorite. One other great rib, and I didn't witness it, but it was told to me by Alfred that, you remember Frenchie Martin, who was the manager. You know, he had the paint gimmick where he had the schmuck and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, you know, the guys would be traveling for hours and hours, you know, endless hours in airports. And they would, you know, you get bored out of your mind. So they would entertain themselves. And, you know, they do the thing like where they put a $10 bill on the floor with a piece of twine. And, you know, somebody would be walking by and it would be laying on the ground. And, of course, you know, you see a $10 bill, you're going to pick it up and they'd the guy would go down to get it and they'd pull it a little bit and it'd be, you know, move like a foot. And the guy would feel like, what the hell, how did that happen? And then he'd go down again and they'd pull it like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but one of the best I've ever heard and I would have loved to have witnessed it, but, remember everybody had these Halliburton, briefcases. And, so the rib was that Frenchie would be walking through the terminal, and he would look for the most, you know, innocent looking person you could possibly imagine, like a group of nuns or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the boys would sit along the side there and just watch this. And so he would have this Halliburton briefcase, and he would, as he approached these people, then he would like run into them, and as he kind of, you know, bumped them, he would trip, and then the Halliburton case he'd open the Halliburton case as he took this bump, and it would be full of disgusting sex toys, just disgust. And as he was, you know, bumbling, he would, you know, grab the toys and like put it in the person's hand, you know, like, oh, geez. And they didn't know what they're holding. All of a sudden they'd see they were holding this giant dildo, you know, like, so apparently that was one of the best ever, and that he would pull this off. And God, I wish I would have witnessed it, and I hope to God it's true because it's just a great story. But they would, you know, do things for, you know, to just pass the time because they were going to be waiting for flights forever. Mm-hmm. But Alfred told me that story, so I'm going to take it as gospel.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on now. We got a few questions about your departure from the WWE. We'll start off with Garrett Hernandez on Patreon. He says, why did you never consider joining WCW? It would have been something special to see you with Mean Gene and Bobby again.
Yeah, and I've been asked that question many, many, many times, and it just never happened. When I was ready to leave the WWF in 93, I had a plan already in place. Or at least I thought I did. And I remember sitting in Vince's office when my contract was up, and I went over. I had a whole letter prepared to give him, you know, saying I was not coming back. And when I told him that, and Kevin Dunn was there too, and I just told he, I told him I'm not going to renew my contract, and he said, well, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm not real sure yet. I've got some, you know, ideas. And he said, well, come on, you can just tell me. You're going south. You're going down south. And I'm like, no. I mean, initially, what do you mean? He's like, WCW. And I said, no. I mean, I was just like, it just hit me like, what? No, that's not what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, it's, you know, I mean, a lot of people doing that and, you know, understand. I said, no, Vince, if I'm going to work for any wrestling organization, it's going to be you. I mean, there's no, why would I do that? You're the, you know, it's the best company there is. Mm-hmm. And he didn't believe me, I don't think. I mean, he really thought that I was going to turn up there. But honestly, I never received a call. Eric never called me even to inquire at all. And I think I had Tony called me once when he was down there and just said, I think he'd heard I was leaving and just said, would I be interested in maybe, you know, and I don't think there was any, I don't even know if that was, you know, Eric going through him to see if I would be interested or if it was just him thinking, hey, you know, maybe because we got along really well. Mm-hmm. But I just told him that, you know, it's not where I am right now. Maybe down the road, I don't know. But that was it. I never, ever had another conversation. It wasn't on my radar at all. And apparently not theirs either because, you know, I didn't get any other phone calls and it didn't happen. But, you know, I think that while those guys made a lot of money, I don't know if it was the greatest experience for them. I mean, yes. You know, I don't think I would have enjoyed it doing it. It just sounded, well, I wasn't there. But just judging from what I've heard Tony talk about it and Bobby was not happy there, and Gene, you know, made a lot of money, but I don't think that I don't know if that's decisions that they regretted because financially it was a good move, but I hated to see what happened with Bobby,
yeah,
because he was never the same after that, you know, and he was so good, so great, and when I've watched that. That's, you know, that scene where Gorilla throws him out of the arena.
Yeah,
I get tears. I mean, it tears me up because I know that was all a work and everything, but God, it was the ending of those two.
Right.
And God, I can't even watch it. It's really emotional for me to see that's the way it ended between them, really, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, I'm even thinking about it now. It makes me really emotional,
right,
because they were just so good, and you know what how I feel about the two of them, and especially them as an announced team too. So,
well, and you know the other thing too that I just remembered as you were talking, and you know we always joke about that bingo break thing, and one thing I remember from that is when Bobby came out, he introduced himself and he started to say that he was with the WWF, but then he had to correct himself.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. That was, you know, and that was a really great thing what Bobby did. And it wasn't, I mean, he did that for Gorilla and also Nelson Swegler, who put that show together. But, I mean, you know, Bobby lived in Florida. He didn't, you know, he didn't have to come to Baltimore to do that, and he did. And, you know, it was just a really great tribute to his friend that he did that and for Nelson, too.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And, you know, things change.
Yeah.
But God, when they were on top, when they were kings, man, they were just the best ever.
TJL66 on Twitter asks, after you left in 1993, did the WWE ever call you to come back, or was there any interest on your part to return?
Not until one great story that, and it's kind of a follow up to me leaving the WWF and Vince thinking I was going to go work for the WCW. And I went, and started to work for WWR in New York. And I started as a feature reporter or like a correspondent. I mean, I was just doing, beating the street for stories and trying to make my way there. And eventually I got the opportunity to anchor there. And I remember after the first night that I officially started anchoring there when I was, doing it every night. The next day, I got a telegram from Vince congratulating me. I still have it. Yeah. And that really touched me that I'd been away for, God, more than a year or so. And that he took the time to do that. But it also made me feel good because that he recognized that. And I think that one of the reasons that he did that also is that, I gave people that had worked for him, talent that had worked for him, some credibility. And I mean, here I was doing, news in the New York market, having been a wrestling announcer, as the quotes come up. And I remember Phil Mushnick, who was a big sports writer there. Oh God, he hated Vince. If you guys, know the history of that, yep. He hated professional wrestling and just despised Vince. And with that, he hated me because of my work there. And whenever he would write about anything that had to do with the news or something I was doing, it was always former wrestling announcer Sean Mooney, just to put the boots to me. I mean, it didn't matter. I would have, I had an investigative report last night. Why didn't he investigate Vince McMahon, that's just kind of the way it was. But I think that, first of all, Vince also realized I didn't lie to him. I didn't go south. And also, I think I, added credibility to, the work that I had accomplished with him and become a good broadcaster. Mm-hmm. So anyway, following on that, so for many years, I was went to work in Boston for a while, and then I ended up back out in Arizona. And, there was one point where they called me and they wanted me to come back to audition. And this was a point, God, I don't know how many years ago it was. It's probably 7 or so now. And they wanted me to come back and audition. And I think this was a point where Vince was just, he was fed up with a lot of the announcers, how he kind of goes in and out. Yep. And so somebody must have said, you should get Sean Mooney back here or whatever. And he's like, well, sure, get him out here or something. And they called me and I went out there and basically re-auditioned. They had me do some play-by-play. They had me cut a promo, do an interview, and came back out to Arizona, not really knowing what was going on. And then 2 days later, they called me and said, hey, can you be in Rochester on Tuesday? And I'm like, yeah, because I wasn't, I was kind of at that point, I had my production company had pretty much folded up because I was working for Fox Sports Arizona, and Pac-12 came along, and I had a really good business. I was doing stuff with I was doing two shows, producing two shows for Fox Sports Arizona, and once Pac-12 came in, it just killed me because I was doing all college sports. Right. So I was doing all kinds of freelance stuff. I was doing sideline for rugby. I was wherever I could get work. And so this came along at a good time. And so, like I said, I went back there, auditioned, thought everything was great. And they called me and said, hey, can you be in, Kevin had through another person and said, can you be in Rochester on Tuesday? And somewhere in there, there was a meeting or something. And that was it. Not just don't come. Don't, here's a ticket. Nothing, not a word. And, I've been back since to do, you guys have seen the stuff that I did for, with the Edge and Christian show. And then I did that bit with Peter Rosenberg, which I love that bit. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's one of my favorites. I love that that pre-show that we got to do, the little bit. But anyway, but nobody has ever told me what happened. What happened in that meeting? What was who said no, or did they patch it up with whoever the announcer? I don't know. I still to this day don't know. And then I just went on and I did my thing because, you know, that's how when you work in this business, you keep going, and that's what I did.
Jared England on Patreon asked, did you ever see yourself coming back to the WWF after you left in 93? And if WWE ever wanted to bring you back to the company, would you come back? Obviously you did, but...
Yeah, well, that, you know, and I just kind of following up on the question you asked before, that, you know, did opportunities come up, but, and I, you know, I have done a few things here. They wanted me to come back for the 25th anniversary show, which I really would have loved to have done. I just couldn't get out of work. I, you know, I have my my job as a person, a host out here in the morning show, and I couldn't get free for those dates. But as far as would I go back there, I mean, not in that capacity. I wouldn't go back and be, you know, doing the grind that those guys do. And but I would love to do, you know, vintage stuff for the network. I mean, that would be fun. I'd love to go back, you know, every once in a while and shoot a bunch of episodes or whatever. You know, I'd be wide open for that. And I think that there's a lot of great material on there that I could enhance. Mm-hmm. But as far as going back like that, nah, I don't think so.
Did you ever, after you left, did you ever envision that you would be back? I mean, I'm talking about like right, you know, 93, 94, 95, whatever. Did you ever envision that you'd be back, and especially in the capacity that you are?
Oh God, no, not at all. You know, it's funny the road that you travel, because I never wanted to really get back into news either. That was, you know, when I first got out of college, I had a radio television degree, and I thought that, you know, I would do something like in news or something like that. And I remember I had an internship at a TV station and hated it. I just thought, yeah, this guy, one of the worst jobs ever. And people were so mean and nasty and stressed out. And I was like, no way, man. And it's just funny how the road takes you, that I actually, you know, was fortunate to get that job in New York working for Major League Baseball Productions, and then got a really rich background in production, and then got in front of a camera. And so, you know, once I worked for the WWF, I always thought, okay, I'll just do something different, because I wanted to get into entertainment television, and really didn't envision going back, but I missed it. I missed it. Once I was gone for a few years and had thought about, yeah, God, I would like to go back. I didn't want to go back to do the event center, but I did. I missed it. I missed the fun and the shows and doing the interviews with the guys and, you know, those old crazy Coliseum videos where we got to run free and wild and just create. So, you know, that stuff, that I did miss. But, you know, it just didn't happen that way. I mean, other opportunities came up.
Juan Rosales on Twitter asks, I know that when you left the WWF, Vince initially thought you were going to WCW, but how was the tone of his voice when he reacted? Was he mad or was he understanding?
No, he was incredibly understanding, which, you know, if you have to know what was going on back then with the company. It was not, things weren't going so well. This was 93. You know, the whole thing with the steroid trial was brewing, and all of these things going on with Hulk, and you know, there was just a lot of turmoil. They didn't really have you know, somebody to replace him that they felt was really strong to do it. Warrior was a maniac, as far as you didn't know, you know, he was in and out. Mm-hmm. and they had actually started asking people to take cuts in pay. And I mean, in a lot, I mean, substantial cuts in pay. So, and I was making very good money then. And maybe in some sense, you know, they didn't, I don't know if they had other plans with the event center or what they were going to do, because I know after I left the event, there was really no event center. They, They did something where it was kind of a faux event center where they would just do the big markets. But the event center that existed when I was there was really no more. And it was, in a sense, because pat my own back here, but it took somebody special to be able to do that, to be able to sit there, you know, market after market after market after market. And I had it down at that point. Mm-hmm. And to get somebody else in there to do that, you know, was not going to happen easily, you know. And so I think that, you know, it was something that I just knew was going to, you know, go the other way, you know. So I don't know. What was the original question here?
They were asking about Vince's reaction.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Was
yeah.
he mad or was
so
he
anyway, mad? When I was sitting in that office that I don't remember. He didn't say, no, Sean, you can't go. No, you can't. So who knows? They may have had in their mind that they were going to let me go or ask me to take a huge cut in pay. I don't know. That never got to that point. It was and I felt good about it because I really felt like it was my decision. Mm. But, you know, who knows? They may have had in the cards, maybe I had a few more months, so maybe they weren't going to renew me. I don't know. But I kind of took control of it and stepped away. Yeah. So kind of was on my terms. But as I said, there was a lot going on in the company. So I don't know. I don't know how much longer maybe they would have let me go at some point when they were cutting back there. I don't know.
Ash22477 on Instagram says, are there any superstars from back in the day that you still keep in touch with?
Well, you see the guys that we've had come back on the program. And it's not like, you know, I touch base with these guys all the time. But, you know, it's awesome. Like, you know, Brutus will send a text here and there, wish me a happy Christmas or Merry Christmas. Or and Ted, you know, I can text him back and forth the answers, and Hacksaw once in a while we connect, but it's not like, you know, we're all buds and I'm like we, you know, see you in Tampa right. like that. But what's been nice about it though is that I do feel like I've reconnected with these guys, and people like Joe Laurinaitis and, you know, these guys. That's nice, you know, that but it's not like we're all buds. I never really had that relationship with them back in the day. And so, but it is, you know, it's great that, you know, like Ted feels that he could text me and say, hey, Mooney, you know, mention this on the podcast so that everybody knows this is the way it is. Right. And he knows I'll do it. So it's really nice. It really is. It's kind of brought those connections back in to my life, and I love it.
Newt Ragnar Hegseth Baki on Facebook.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a name for your ass.
How was it to work with Bruce Pritchard?
Ooh, Bruce. Wow. You know, Bruce admits that he was difficult in his day and his when he was younger. And he could be really tough, man. He could be really, really hard on you. But I will say, you know, that he helped me out a lot. He really did. And even when I first came on, I know that he was one of the people that, you know, helped get me on the roster there. I mean, he was part of that audition, you know, that I had in that audition, and, you know, sell me the broom. And he's told the story that I did a good job with it. And, you know, I could always go to him because, like, I didn't know, you know, I was green as could possibly be. And he would take me aside and help me out and with the interviews because, you know, he's so talented when it comes to that stuff. And I mean, he was actually, you know, he would do the interview like with me in that voice, whoever I was, and work with me. And so I'm indebted to him forever for that. And he took care of me. He really did. He took care of me, and I know he got me into, you know, doing a lot of things because he was close to Vince, and let Sean do it, and he'll get it. And it was, you know, overall, it was a great relationship. It really was. And, you know, and he's, I consider him a friend. I really do. And I'm glad that I had the chance to reconnect with him since. And I'm just also really glad that things have turned out so great for him. I mean, I don't think people really appreciated how talented that guy was when he was, you know, back in the day with Brother Love and the whole thing. But, you know, Conrad Thompson certainly introduced that to the world with the podcast. And really, he's unbelievably talented. There's no question about it. I don't know if you've ever seen one of their shows, but here you have two guys, basically, and the people they invite to come on, but it's two guys sitting at a table that they set up on stage, and he has all these little masks on sticks of the characters that he does. And sure, there's bits that they have gone and they've done that work, and they use them over and over again. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of ad-libbing going on that just happened. And it's really entertaining. I mean, it was, you know, it's like a 2-hour show, and it is, it's really entertaining. And I think that at some point, when Bruce isn't so damn busy doing what he's doing now, which just perplexes me, like, why? Why would you want to jump into that fire pit? Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a challenge, and that's something that Bruce wanted to do. But I hope that they do more shows so people get to see, you know, what Bruce does on stage. He really is. He's just a very funny guy.
Yeah. Toby Bovington on Twitter asks, at SummerSlam 89, you did a post-match interview with the Honky Tonk Man. You remarked, quote, they're a long way from Graceland. Was that ad-libbed?
I'm sure it was. I can't even remember the context of which
I
said that, but
I think if I remember correctly, that was the match where he got squashed by the Warrior in like 30 seconds, and Warrior won the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
And then he came. I think he was in the aisleway. I'm not sure. It's either there or backstage. But then, yeah, you caught up with him and you asked him that, and I think he just kind of, I don't know, I can't remember what he did, but that's the context.
Wanted to hit me with a guitar?
I think he was too dazed to hit anybody with a guitar, really.
Yeah.
Because I think Warrior just, like, press slammed him and crushed him and pinned him, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's, as people know, that those weren't really scripted.
Right.
And so, you know, I may have thought about the line before, you know, when he came out, how I would wrap it up or something. But, yeah, I don't think it was, that wasn't, you know, because it would have been along the lines of all the other interviews we did. Now, Saturday Night Main Event stuff was pretty tight. You had to remember your lines for that stuff because they had it all, you know, blocked out and timed out. And so, but the other ones, I mean, usually even for the pay-per-views, it was pretty loose. They would say, you know, do this and do that, and we'll go this way, and you know, that's kind of the way it was. But, God, do I remember it exactly? Sorry. Too long ago.
All right. Travis Peters on Facebook asks, what was your opinion at first of the smaller guys getting a shot like Bret Hart to be world champion instead of the Hogan and Warriors when Bret won the title in 93?
Well, to tell you honestly, I always like the smaller guys in the ring because I just thought that they could do a lot more and they were more technical, you know, with what they could do. And Bret, man, was so good. All the things that he could do and the way he could make the other guy look great. The bigger guys were more limited and, you know, they'd have kind of this toolbox that they would use, and there was only so much. But Bret was, you know, always coming up with new stuff, and you know, and always thinking about, you know, better ways to sell or a better way to tell a story or storylines. So you know, I love the big guys. There's certainly, when you see what they were able to accomplish in the ring and just for the sheer, you know, violence of it is great to watch them. But, you know, watching people like the Rockers and Bret, and seeing what he could do, you know, I I enjoyed that wrestling more, but I, you know, certainly all of it was great. But if I had my preference of it, yeah. Cause what did Warrior do? Warrior came out and shook the ropes, you know, and then took people's heads off. And like I said, for the sheer violence of that and the excitement, yeah, it's fun to watch. But if you really like to see what these guys could do back then, and you know, I loved watching that a lot more.
Carl Kerkerunto, I apologize for butchering that, on Patreon asks, what's the single best thing you ever saw in your time with the WWE?
Wow. The single best thing I ever saw?
Yeah.
Like, in a, is it like a match or
match, I mean, an event? Match, promo.
What? God, that's, ooh, that's a big box. just opened up there. Boy.
Like, what's...
I think I would say, you know, The Undertaker, when he really became, you know, kind of came into his own there, and, you know, he would come out and all you had to hear was that gong, and the place would just erupt. And I think, and then also I used to love when he would, you know, be laid out flat and then he would come up straight. And just the reaction that he would get from people, that was always, you know, always loved that whole gimmick with like the entrance and the, you know, it just scared the shit out of people. It was like, you know, and then the coffins and putting people in the boxes because you know, you can only imagine if that was you.
Yeah.
But I think everything, you know, that whole thing with the Undertaker, but that, you know, where he would come up, you know, just all of a sudden come up like Michael Myers or something was always great to watch. And you know, as I said before, the being in at some of those matches with Hulk and just the sheer madness of the excitement and the energy in a building that he would generate was something I've never seen and haven't seen since like that.
Yeah. BMAC on Twitter asks, any good stories or memories you can share on Sherry Martel?
Oh boy. I've told a few about Sherry, that, how she used to beat the living crap out of me with, when we did Spotlight. And she just, relished it. She knew that, she could get away with it with me. I mean, you know, the thing is about, and I don't know how many people have really experienced this, but when you had come to that realization that this person, you know, could hurt you and you would, like, if you tried to fight back, you wouldn't stand a chance. And Sherry was just like that. I mean, if it ever got, she was that, had that, that presence about her, but also a really, really sweet person. God, what did I've told the story before how she taped me to the chair, and then they left and then flipped me and then they left me and went to lunch. That was one of the during one of the Spotlight tapings. God, what else did she do to me? She just was just brutal. I mean, she didn't pull any punches. Literally, like when she would smack me on that show, she smacked me. Like, geez, will you take it easy? God, Sherry was, just a really unique person and, really just, there was a lot of, hurt in her too. You know, I always felt like she just wanted to be, I know this is a sound corny, but she wanted to be loved by somebody just like really loved her. Mm-hmm. And she sacrificed a lot. She had a kid that, she didn't get to be with a lot of the time. She would bring him on the road, but, I think that was tough. And you got to imagine what it was like for her. She's one of those, she's one of the women that broke that barrier of crossing over the line and where she was, in many cases, equal to many of the male superstars. Mm-hmm. And she would deliver it, you know, if they didn't give it to her full force, she would beat the crap out of them. Like she would tell them, you know, like, if you're going to clothesline me, you better make it look, good.
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of respect for her in the ring and, you know, mm-hmm. But God, I've told a lot of the stories about her, but that one, when she tied me up in the, during the show, taped me to the chair was one of the ones that really stood out to me.
Joss DeRoy on Facebook asks, sounds like it was fun doing commentary with Lord Alfred Hayes. Do you have any stories featuring Alfred, or are you doing commentary back in 88 or 89?
Wow. Yeah, we would, Alfred and I did, I don't know, probably hundreds and hundreds of matches that many people in the United States never got to hear because they were, we were doing the commentary for all the folks in the United Kingdom. And Alfred and I got the opportunity to go over to the UK for one of the live events we did over there. And I can't remember if it was one at Albert Hall. I think one of them was. And so I'd been over to the England once before, but that was in school, and I went over there for on tour when I was playing rugby. But I'd never really gotten the chance to, you know, just drive around and see what England was like. And so when we went over there, we rented a car, and you know, you drive on the other side of the road. So I wasn't about to try that. I was too freaked out. So Alfred, we got this car, and I think it was like a Peugeot or something. And so we get on the Autobahn or whatever they called it. It wasn't a freeway. And he goes like you can the speed limit was, I don't think there was one. You could go as fast as you wanted to. And so we're going, he gets this thing up to like 120 miles an hour. I am scared out of my mind because I feel like, you know, a squirrel runs on the road, we're going to be asphalt. And we're doing like 120 miles an hour, and Alfred is laughing because he knows I'm scared to death. I'm like, you know, slow down, like, are you crazy? And he's just having a blast. And this Porsche goes flying by us. The guy had to be doing 160. I mean, it was one of those things where here we're doing 120, and this car blows by us like we're doing 50. To the point where you could feel it in the car. Like we got this guy, you know, like whoosh, and just, you know. And I just remember Alfred laughing. He just thought that was the funniest thing. And I'm white knuckled. I don't think I'd never been in a car that fast ever. I don't think I'd been in a car that went over 100. And so he tortured me. He did. And I just remember that laugh, you know.
Yeah.
He just thought it was a riot. So then, and we had such a good time when we went on that trip. I told the story where we went to that pub and we shot some wraparounds. We were doing the Sherlock Holmes thing. Mm-hmm. And we had the outfits on and the pipe and everything. And if you ever see that video, it's really funny. It's fun. But afterwards, we stayed at the pub and had some pints with some of the locals there who were big fans. And we just... God, I don't even remember how we got home that night, but it was a blast wherever we were staying. But yeah. I'll never forget that. That trip was just so much fun.
All right. Berg Kodaks, and again, I apologize for butchering these names, on Instagram asked, do you have any good Big Boss Man stories?
Ooh, Big Boss Man. Jeez, let me think. Big Boss Man. I think that, you know, like with Bubba, and, you know, he was, you know, a very agile performer. I mean, as big as that guy was, man, he could move. And I just remember one time when he was like messing around, he was supposed to go out. And he, you know, right before he was going to performance, and he would take that stick and he'd like, you know, he could like nunchucks. He could, you know, whirl it around like that and everything, you know. And he was getting ready to go out and he was kind of doing that. And somebody distracted him or something like that. And he whacked his knee with it. And he had to go out to the ring and wrestle. It was at one of the TV tapings. And I just remember he like looked at me like, fucking like F. And he had to go run out there. And I just, he had like limped, kind of limped, that didn't try and make it sell it, but he had to go out there and work. And I remember he came back and he's like, you have no effing idea how that, like my knee's like blown up. So that was a boss man story, but he was, you know, that guy could move.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I've talked about that before. Some of the guys, the bigger boys that I was always amazed at just how, you know, what they could do in the ring. Like Bam Bam Bigelow was just amazing. Fred Ottman too. I remember his I think one of his audition matches that, you know, he wanted to impress them, and he did the standing drop kick where he went up so high, like kicked over the guy's head and then, you know, landed. And even John Tenta, Earthquake was, for as much as that guy was hoisting around, man, he could move. And it wasn't like a ballerina, but man, he could get around that ring.
All right, final question for you, Mooney. Gary Dinsdale on Facebook asks, and I'm kind of curious about this too, who told you to tone down the raised voice on the event center in 89? Was it Vince or Kevin Dunn? You get noticeably calmer after WrestleMania 5. I love that, because I watched those old events.
Oh, it was much earlier than that, wasn't it?
I don't know.
In 89?
I think so. It was right after you came in, and you were doing the event center, and you were sitting there doing it like this.
And I've told this story before, and I have to, all this, you have to blame, I'm sorry, but you have to blame Howard Finkel, because, Gene wasn't around to really train me or help me along, and Howard was the guy who kept track of all of the interviews. I mean, that was one of his other jobs that he did, and, Howard had this big, giant, legal book. Those big, I don't know what they call them, but it was probably, it was a binder and you could write in there. The people used them for financial stuff, but this is how he would keep track of all who was doing whatever interviews. He had the big book. But anyway, Howard was the one that was in charge of that. And so in a sense, he was in charge of the event center. And so when I came in, he thought as a ring announcer, and he thought that that's how I should do the event center. And so he would keep telling me, it's not enough energy. You gotta really give it. It sounds like you're not doing, you're being energetic, but you're not, you gotta really. And so that's when I was doing, hello, everybody, the Madison Square Garden. It's Friday night. And I was thinking, how I sound insane. And I look insane for this.
Pretty much.
That went on for quite a while, and he also would correct me and say I would say WWF, and he said it's not WWF, it's Devu. Like he would say it. If you look back, he said Dev. It's like Devu, Devu. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I think it's W. Howard, no, I keep listening. It sounds like So here I am yelling and then saying WWF, and finally I just said, this ain't working. Either I will lose my voice, all the time, which I did early on, and I sound like a maniac. So can I try it my way? Let me just do it this way. And that's when I finally got to turn the volume back, and and everybody was saying, hey, you're doing, it's great, love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That he, said, try and instruct me anymore. But yeah. You're exactly right. It's so hard for me to look at that stuff because I sound like so bad, bad. It really is. There's no question about it. You're right. But I didn't think it took that long. I don't think it was 2 years.
I don't think so either. Well, WrestleMania 5 would have been.
Well, I was there for, I think my first one was 4, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. My first WrestleMania.
Yep.
I think that's right. So. I'm glad I did, because that's I think why I stayed employed. But I just said, "F it, I'm not doing it that way anymore, Howard. It doesn't sound good."
You should do the podcast this way. That way, coming up on Prime Time this week.
Yeah, yeah. But it was also so over enunciated, and it was a ring announcer doing it. A ring announcer doing the event center.
Yep.
But that was kind of Howard's theory. He thought that, I should be like him.
Right.
This event center is scheduled for one fall.
That's all I got for you, Mooney. You came off you did good today.
Wow. An hour. We've been going, an hour and a half already? Good Lord.
I know, right?
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that... we'd love to hear from people to get your feedback on, we are going to be doing more of these interviews with the talent, the personalities of the NWA. and not quite sure how we're going to do it yet. If we're going to devote one day, or, you know, like we have with the Network Classics now, maybe do one that's just NWA focused, or if we're going to include it into PTSM. I'd love to get your feedback on that. And so email me at primetimemooney@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. I'm really excited about what's going on. You know, it's certainly gotten a lot of attention of people out there, and I hope it's bringing more of them to the podcast to listen to all of the other great personalities. If you're just joining us, please check out our library. We've talked to a lot of people over the years now, we can say. And I don't know, Casey, I think we're probably well over 100 and something episodes at this point, probably coming up on 150, I would think.
Easy.
Yeah, so you go on there, I guarantee you're going to find 10 interviews to start with that you absolutely want to listen to, and you're going to learn a lot about all of the these personalities and the roads that they've traveled. And one thing that there's a recurring theme with all of our episodes, and that is that pretty much every single one of them is a very inspirational person. These are, you know, folks who came from, in many cases, little or nothing. And you have to imagine that when they decided they wanted to pursue a life in professional wrestling, those around them told them, "You're out of your mind." And they refused to quit. And even when they got in, which is very difficult to do, as you'll hear many of the stories tell you, that when they went to these schools, that whoever was the instructor, or whatever you want to call them, their mission was to convince you not to do it, because they wanted to see if you really did. And so, I mean, tested along the way, and you know, for years working, you know, independent circuit, working for organizations before really getting a break, making no money, and then, you know, reaching untold fame and fortune. And, you know, that just really, most of them are very inspirational, wouldn't you say, Casey?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So many.
You get so many messages from these guys, and they always go so far deeper than the surface. And I always learn something from these interviews, so it's good for me. I like it.
Yeah, I have that way about me, Casey, making people open up and tell me things that tell us things that they may normally not reveal. Right?
Yeah.
I have that way. All right. Well, I really enjoyed this episode. You know, when we start these, Casey, I have no idea. I'm like, God, what are we gonna get? Like 20 minutes? And look at me, I've just rambled on for an hour and a half. So follow us on all of our social media. We've got a lot happening. So now's a good time to get on board with keeping in touch with us on Twitter at Primetime Mooney, or of course, Sean Mooney at Sean Mooney Who. You can follow me there. And also at Primetime Mooney with Instagram. You know, we've got a lot of folks following us on Instagram. Casey, did you know that?
Yeah, they're in Twitter. It's really nice to see. I'm glad that
crazy
people are following us.
Yeah, and we're putting stuff up on YouTube too, so you can check out the Primetime Mooney YouTube channel. And we're going to probably start putting up more stuff video wise too, so pay attention to all the stuff we got coming out your way, and a lot more great content. So Casey, thank you. Anything else that I need to plug?
Nope, you're good.
Well, I heard they got a new t-shirt. We got a new t-shirt out there. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah. So go to MooneyTees.com. I think there's one that's like, what is it, Guess Who's Back or something like that? I don't know. We got a new shirt, so go check that out at MooneyTees.com. And we got some other great ones up there. But and more to come. We've got some new designs on the way, so check out MooneyTees.com. Anything else?
No, I think let's just wrap it up.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us once again. Remember, we've got Network Classics on Monday, and then, of course, original episodes of Prime Time with Sean Mooney on Wednesdays, and then the Vault episodes on Saturdays. They all drop at 6 a.m., and check out our Patreon membership, You could become a Legion of Who member or a Mooney for some extra perks. Or you can just join our Patreon membership. And just for $4.99 a month, you get all of our content absolutely ad-free and early. Right, Casey? You get those early. So check that out. Go to our Patreon membership page at patreon.com/primetimemooney. That's patreon.com/primetimemooney. All right, I think I've plugged it all. I've talked myself out here. So, folks, have a great week. And we'll be back next Wednesday with an original episode. But in the meantime, be well. I'm Sean Mooney, and I am out.